First thing I want to say is that unfortunately we had a major glitch, transatlantic glitch last week. We were scheduled to talk to Sister Joan Chittister, who spends a couple of months each year in a kind of writing sabbatical in Ireland. She goes to County Kerry, where she has a lovely little place up on a mountainside, but the downside is that it's many miles away from the nearest neighbor and 25 kilometers away from the nearest town, and there is no landline, no connection to anything, except there is internet connection as long as the adjacent tower continues to function. Well, they had gale force winds, and the tower went down, and she was, as the tower was about to go down, she was able to get out an email message saying, "I'm about to be offline. We can't do this thing," because she'll be connecting through Skype. So we're working to reschedule that. We're just going to add another week on to the end of things. But the week before, we had an extraordinary conversation with Father Thomas Keating. And those of you who listen know that it was really a remarkable call. Thomas Keating who is a Trappist monk. He is at the Snowmass Abbey in Colorado. He's often regarded as, for those of you who know something about the history of the interreligious movement, as actually most of you do, he's often regarded as the possessor of the mantle, as they might say, of the late Father Thomas Merton, who died in 1968, and was really the Christian pioneer of dialogue with other religions, and particularly with the Eastern religions. Thomas Merton met His Holiness the Dalai Lama and spent 3 days with him, which were within the last 5 days of Thomas Merton's life. On that trip to the Far East, he died in an accident, but a few days before that he had spent time with the Dalai Lama, and I always remember, and I've discussed with Father Keating, their memorable parting when the Dalai Lama is coming away and turns to his retinue and says, "You know, that guy is a Geshe," and a Geshe is a degree within the Tibetan order that signifies one is a bodhisattva, a being on the way to enlightenment. And apparently Thomas Merton at the same time turned to his friends with him and said, "You know, that guy's a saint." And I always remember that and have often sort of chuckled about that with Thomas Keating. So we asked Thomas, Father Thomas, about Thomas Merton, and he agreed that this was a real pioneer of interreligious dialogue and deep spiritual understanding, and of the link between spirituality, compassion, and service. We talked about that important link between compassion and action. And many of you will be aware of the fact that in many traditions, there has been a kind of split between those who say compassion and deep prayer and so on, that's the way to go, and others who have said, no, the way to go is service and action in the world. And I asked Thomas Keating about that, and he said, obviously, that the one without the other simply is nothing. So I thought that was kind of remarkable. We also talked about his role in the development of the movement called Centering Prayer. Centering Prayer, which is an approach that's very much like meditation, but it has a kind of Western Jewish or Christian approach, and he is really one of the three major architects of that tradition, and has become that technique and tradition has become the major voice of it in the West. So we talked a little bit about centering prayer and how important that is, and I mentioned in the course of our conversation that those who were interested in centering prayer could learn more about it by going to contemplativeaction.org. I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's contemplativeoutreach.org, www.contemplativeoutreach.org. You can find out a whole lot more about centering prayer, and there are some videos with Father Thomas Keating. If you heard his voice and were charmed by it, as I think most of you were, and would like to see the man and see him in action, there are some really wonderful videos on contemplativeoutreach.org. Finally, I'd just love to share with you a word about Father Thomas. Actually, a little bit of an excerpt from our conversation. And at the very end, a word of Father Duarte, another remarkable priest who will join us, another peace counselor who will join us next week. Anyway,
we're having some trouble with your sound again, unfortunately.
I wonder
why. Are you moving around?
No, I'm right here with my bass.
Okay, now I hear you again. Go ahead.
Okay, let me know.
I will.
I asked him that the question, this question, I think it's interesting that you bring up the idea that ours might be a second axial age. The first axial age was the birth of the great classical religious traditions of ethics and spirituality, and that's the first millennium before the time of Christ. And I said to Thomas that our mutual friend Ewart Cousins, who died a couple of years ago, had argued very strongly that we're now living in a second axial age. Is this really a time of progressive shift? And you know, if you've been listening, this is a theme that has run through all our conversations, a time of evolutionary cultural value shift, change for the better. In our conversations, we've touched on new approaches to peace and justice, a deepening sense of the sacredness of the earth and all life, and also the growth of religious pluralism. We talked about that with Marcus Braybrook, for example, and Paul Nitter. And I asked Thomas how he responded to that hopeful array, and he said this. He said, yes, there's a whole new world opening up to the ancient religions and the new religions, for that matter. And the idea is that this pluralism is not just a matter of seeing how many religions we can think up, but at least beginning with the ones that have committed, that our cultures have committed to, and seeing if we can bring them together, especially on the spiritual level, where all evidence is pointing to the fact that they're all talking about similar, if not the same, experiences, such as contemplative prayer, or the way that the divine penetrates all of creation and moves it, that we are allowed to co-create the future with the divine. We have the intelligence for it, and God expects us to do this within the parameters of some of the great insights of the world's religions regarding morality and justice and equal rights for everyone, respect for the earth, and all the other things that you mentioned. This is what human beings should be doing. I mean, that's our revolutionary destiny and duty. So far, many of us are not leading a human life in that sense of using our capacity or our abstract knowledge to really love one another and to forgive and practice compassion and get along. So the vocation of religion now, it seems to me, is not to convert people to their particular persuasions, but to create communion in the human family. And then here's the line I really love. Friendship, understanding, love, and respect. And so in my opinion, if you don't love all of the religions, you're not practicing your own correctly.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was pretty remarkable. Next week we'll be joined by another priest, a remarkable guy, Gonzalo Ituarte. Gonzalo happens to be the provincial, the head of the Dominican Order in Mexico, a very lofty position, but he served for many years as the vicar for peace and justice in the state of Chiapas, which is the richest state in Mexico in terms of its resources and the poorest in terms of the way its people actually live. And he worked very closely with one of the original peace counselors. Gonzalo is now a peace counselor. But he worked with Bishop Samuel Ruiz Garcia, who was often referred to as the Red Bishop because he was red as in communist or socialist, because he fought the good fight for the poor people, especially the Maya people of Mexico. And Gonzalo worked very closely with him in his struggles. A remarkable guy with a remarkable experience and a true spiritual being, and someone you'll want to meet. I mean, he's funny, he's happy, and he's got amazing depth in the fields of spirituality and social justice. It for me.
Well, I know that. I don't know how many. Maybe I'll take a show of hands of how many people on the call today heard Father Keating's talk a week ago Monday. You could press 1 on your keypad. Let me know how many of you actually were at the call. looks as if about half our folks were. But I wanted to say that a volunteer from our partner Humanities team actually transcribed the entire dialogue between Jim and Father Keating. And if you go to agnt.org to the link called teleseries/recordings. Oops. Sorry, I was just corrected. Teleseries-recordings. You can actually find and download a copy of that written transcript, because sometimes reading it, like when Jim was pointing out that there are such gems of wisdom, and sometimes reading it, you can find so much more than what you hear as the words go by so quickly. You know, Jim, I'm thinking here after we've done about, you know, we're halfway through the series or so, and I'm realizing that all of the peace counselors demonstrate kind of a unique, I would like to say in a good way, revolutionary quality that we don't ordinarily expect from all leaders of the world's religious traditions, and that has to do with their, let's say, it's as if they're open to new wisdom and kind of a the progressive future of what's already true and good about their religion. But they realize, by the way that Father Keating mentioned, if you don't love all religions, then you're really practicing none of them. This openness toward the fact that people of all faiths have a right and almost a responsibility to practice their faith in their own way, but that the sort of inherent respect and compassion that should come from all other faith traditions is a point that all of your peace counselors obviously share. But I would say that is not necessarily true of other religious people, unless I'm very mistaken on that point. I find an openness here that one wouldn't ordinarily expect.
I would say two things about that. First of all, let me say something about the Peace Council, because on a couple of occasions we've talked about it at length and said, you know, this is really a remarkable experiment. But it's worth reiterating in case people are might be wondering, well, what is the Peace Council? And it's an organization, a small organization that grew out of the 1993 Parliament of the World's Religions. And the founder of the Peace Council, his name is Daniel Gomez Ibanez, who has retired now, but and the three of us worked together very closely in organizing the 1993 Parliament and spent about 5 years in that process. Well, in the course of it, Daniel developed a very strong relationship with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. You now enjoy that relationship, Barbara, His Holiness said, you know, if it would be really wonderful if religious leaders could get to know one another and become friends and spend a little time together and then come together to use their religious influence and their moral authority to make a difference in places in the world where there's conflict or where peace is absent but possible. And so that's where the idea was planted. And so from the very beginning, and I was involved with Daniel from the beginning of the Peace Council, we looked for religious leaders that would immediately understand that, immediately, I would say, subscribe to the essential values of pluralism, the idea that more than one religion can be true, and that the truth of my religion, instead of being an argument against the truth of yours, is very likely an argument for the truth of yours, that if mine is true, yours probably is as well. It's sort of like saying if one art form is true, chances are another, although it's very, very different and would even seem almost to be contradictory, might be true as well. And so we've had very good luck in bringing in people to the Peace Council that understand that. But I would also say this, you and I have both been involved in the global interreligious movement for a long time, and I think we could both testify to the fact that the range or the breadth of pluralistic and inclusivist understanding has grown amazingly across the world's religions. So whereas 20 years ago it might have been pretty challenging to find a significant number of people in the world's religions that had that attitude that there's truth in the other and that I'm going to be enriched by my engagement with the other, today it's not hard to find those people. not hard to find those people on the global level, and it's not hard at all to find them on the local level. And I'm sure almost everybody on this call has some experience that would validate that. So it's not what we would wish for, and it's certainly not the currency of exchange between the religions, the idea that yours is probably true as well, and chances are I can learn a great deal from my dialogue with you. But it's becoming. It's the cutting edge. So I often say to people that when I'm discussing this, which would you rather invest in? Fundamentalism futures or pluralism futures? And I think there's simply no question about it. Fundamentalism, the enclave mentality, the science-denying mentality, the other-denying mentality, is a force to be reckoned with in the world. But I don't think it's a force that has much future. Whereas pluralism, it seems to me, and global thinking, sort of like thinking about gender equity, social justice, nonviolent conflict resolution, and pluralism, they all fit together. They are interpenetrating and mutually supporting, and anyone that thinks they're going to go away is wrong.
Yeah, I happen to completely agree with you on that, but we also noticed for many years, at least this last decade, it's been very true that there's a certain kind of a phenomenon that occurs when an established institution actually realizes at some level, whether it's conscious or less than conscious, that its days are numbered, that its worldview is numbered. If it's exclusive and lacks the open-mindedness to other people's rights, that they...
But also in my book, which, if you don't mind the shameless plug, it's called Thriving in the Cross Current, and it's about the idea of cultural evolution. And in Thriving, I talk about the notion that we're living in a time of dramatically accelerated cultural evolution. First of all, that there's such a thing as cultural evolution, that it really happens, that cultures do get wiser and better, and our values do move in the direction of a closer fit with reality. But I also talk about what I call eddies, sort of counterclockwise whirlpools of resistance. So as a matter of fact, I name several eddies, and the four that I name as the deadliest, I have to admit that I call this section of the book Four Deadly Spins.
Very cute.
But the four deadly spins are fundamentalism, fascism, greed, and hegemony. By hegemony, you know, that's just the Greek, from the Greek for the what the Latins called tyranny. That's power gone mad. Greed is wealth gone mad. Fundamentalism and fascism are ideologies gone mad. But I do have a website that I will also shamelessly plug. It's called SeaChanges, SeaChanges.net. And if you go there, there's a tab that's called Why the Turmoil. Click on Why the Turmoil, and you'll get a little exploration of the idea that you just outlined, Barbara, of eddies. Why is it that if we're living in a time of cultural evolutionary shift, and we're moving toward pluralism and understanding social justice better and getting over patriarchy and getting over racism, why doesn't it feel like it? And so I explore some of the eddies of resistance that really rock our world, that aren't going to change, aren't going to set back the evolutionary change, but can make it a period of real turbulence. So check out that, and check out the idea of the eddy. I think understanding the nature of evolutionary shift, and understanding that it faces these eddies of resistance, you said it exactly right. Some of our institutions and our habits and our assumptions about the way things are will not go gently into that good night. But go, they will.
Jim, you know, I know that you only have limited time with us on Thursdays after your recap, but we have a few minutes left of you, and we have a relatively small group today. And I keep thinking about how the people who are on this call, they're here, they're so dedicated to not only the Monday calls, but this especially, because they're probably the ones who are doing the most active, treacherous work in their local communities. And I wonder if you wouldn't mind taking a couple of questions from our group. if they have any, that generally speak to all of the points that you're making right now. Are it's like a fractal. They're also true at the local level, just as they are at the broad global overview level. And I bet you that people are running into issues that concern these points all the time, and maybe they have questions for you about what might be the best approach. How do you actually bring this kind of change to real individual people and communities that are afraid, basically? Do we have anybody today who'd like to just talk about this or ask a question of Jim on this point?
Let me just say it's brilliant to point out that it is absolutely fractal. You know, it's consistent right down the scale. If it works at the global level, it's probably true at the regional level, and it's true at the national level, it's true at the local level. That's very good insight.
Yeah, well, what did we say? Omnilocal is global. What else
is
global?
That's right, that's right.
So, let me see. You raise your hand by pressing 1 on your telephone keypad, and I think that Joy already has a question. Joy, would you like to ask?
Sure. My question is, I'm trying to help Church of the Restoration, the Unitarian Universalist Church, stay alive. We have 5 or 6 organizations, all small few members, all trying to affirm our own path, and yet I'm having a lunch on Friday, on Sunday, and the main speaker is a humanist, and he's going to be speaking to other Unitarians, and I have asked the Muslims to come. And if I can get the peace organization to come too, that would be wonderful. Our problem is each of us are too small to exist on our own. But if we could all share together on a joint path to preserve this building, then all of us can live. But the problem is, do I put funds into the Muslims? Do the Muslims put funds into the Unitarians? Or should there be an independent fund just for this building so that all of us can still meet there?
You know, that's a problem. What I'm trying to say in my befuddled way is that I face that same problem. And I will say this, that it's extremely difficult. It's just a practical problem. I've often been, and so has Barbara, we've often been in this space where we're trying to promote an interreligious activity, and we imagine that all the religions will contribute. And that's extremely difficult because they all have very complex and demanding agendas of their own. I would say just from a very practical point of view that it's going to be very difficult to convince your Unitarians to give to Muslims and very difficult to convince Muslims to give to Unitarians. If you can create some kind of progressive initiative and define it in such a way that everybody feels ownership and let everybody be involved in that and say, look, what asset do we have? We have the possibility of this building, and there are amazing things that each of us could do with this building, and down the road there are amazing things we could do together with this space. Let's not let this space get away. And I think you have to create some kind of generic, you know, whatever, entity to which all can give. However, having said that, so glibly, I will tell you that it's very difficult to get people to fund something that, especially when the way you define it is, this could be a rich range of possibilities, and you're not entirely sure what those possibilities are.
Mm-hmm.
That's very difficult. But I think if you want to make it work, you're going to have to come together, define some kind of progressive middle ground, and then say, is there a way we can make this work? But you have to talk about it and make it clear to people that you have this enormous potential asset, which is a space, and the goodwill that you all bring. That's all you've got so far. But what can you build from that? I don't know if that's any help at all, Joy.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I wanted to weigh in a comment here that it's kind of an example that our organization, Association for Global New Thought, arose in the midst of 10 separate, well-established New Thought organizations that were all more or less friendly to each other, but definitely weren't going to combine forces. And this is an intra-religious issue. where they all wanted to maintain their separate intra-organizational identities. And AG&T came along. This wasn't so intentional at the time, but we weren't trying to become another New Thought organization. What our mandate was completely different, and what we first started calling it spiritually motivated social action, and now we're moving into more refined language such as spiritually guided social concern, because some people get scared when they hear the word action in church. They think it's political activism, which it is not per se. And we found that since our mandate served basically the goals and desires of many of the organizations, but many of the organizations didn't have the staff or the resources to actually create the kind of programs and resources that is our entire mandate to create. So in a way, it's kind of it's a service place for other organizations. And I just wanted to say to Joy, and Joy, I'm happy to talk with you offline because I don't want to take much more time on this right now, but I'd be happy to work with you on that, because there's a process by which you could get all of those organizations to identify the needs that could be met by such a place that are not now being filled in their own organization. So if you email me or give me a call, we could talk a little more about this. I wanted to take one more question from Kate before Jim has to leave us.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. Before I ask a question, are you able to download or archive the conversation that the two of you have been having today?
Yeah,
with
it's
us?
It's being recorded. Mm-hmm.
You have been able to put together a way for me to share locally here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, with leaders of our churches. We're willing here. There's a lot of us are come together. We meet on a monthly basis, and then we're having an Interfaith Harmony Day coming up in April. We're all Muslims, you name it. We're all here to do it together, but we're not together in the manner in which you spoke today. And if I could just make copies of this conversation and give these to my friend ministers and have them listen to it, they'd get what I've been trying to share with them, and we could come together in a different way. You just did it so well, both of you, and thank you so much.
Well, Kate, thank you for saying that. And once again, I make the same offer, and I bet Jim does too, that if in advance of meeting with those folks you actually wanted to consult a little with me, I won't offer Jim's time necessarily.
No,
but
please do offer my time. I'd be happy to.
This is what we've been working on this for decades, and so we're here to support you in any way we can. But in the meantime, we can forward everyone on this call a link to a posted MP3 file, and you can share that link with other people if they want to listen. So we'll send you an email after the call today that gives you the information you just requested.
Thank you.
And I would say to both Joy and Kate and anyone else, I mean, I'm not sure if you have my email. Do people have my email, Barbara?
No, I guard it because I know how busy you are. But I'm happy to share it if you give me permission.
You can share it. I've been talking about seachanges.net. That's my website, so my email is easy to remember. It's jim@seachanges.net, S-E-A changes. But let me just say quickly to Kate, and I think this might be relevant also to Joy, that one of the tricks that it took us a long time to learn with the Parliament of the World's Religions is that when you're trying to bring together different religious communities, you do not probably want to build a membership organization. For many of these communities, it's going to be very difficult for them to sign on as members of a group that includes people of other religions. So you want simply to have the group, and there it is, and encourage people to support it, make its services available. You have to define it as a neutral space. So I may not want to bring my congregation in to be a member with a group that some in my congregation would be very uncomfortable with.
Uh-huh.
But the idea that we're all going to cooperate, but we're just not putting our name on the letterhead. We're just not, there's no formal membership. And it took us a long time to learn that. It turned out to be a very important lesson. Don't make it a membership organization. Make it a very informal, voluntary association that does good things for all its partners.
Yeah. And that's, I think, what Jim is implying, maybe not saying outright, is that we have the same problem, that if people are signing on as representatives of their organization, then they have to go, they don't even want to go through the process that would allow that to happen formally within their own organization. But if you invite people to join as individuals representing themselves, meaning they're not, whatever they say does not reflect on their organization, they're not held accountable by that organization, but that, you know, you're viewing them as for the qualities that you admire about their individual leadership and participation, then it actually compels people. They feel very empowered by that invitation, as long as they don't feel that they're somehow going to have to, you know, be accountable to their organization for why they're participating on their behalf.
Uh-huh.
So if you see this, you've really opened up a can of worms here. We love this topic.
And we do. And what Barbara has just said is absolutely critical. You do not want to have the Muslim. You want to have a Muslim, a Catholic, a Jew. That's absolutely critical. Nobody is the official representative, and don't use that language. Our Muslim representative makes everybody much more comfortable. So we have a Muslim and a Jew and a Baha'i and a Native American and a New Thought person. And so, yeah, that's the key. Barbara, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that is the other side of what I was talking about.
Do we have any more questions for Jim? If you can still raise your hand, pressing 1 on your keypad. Otherwise, we might, when Jim leaves, we might introduce ourselves and then continue whatever is needed for the group today, but part of this discussion can be continued as well. Because I've heard this issue voiced by other people in the group as well. And we've also been talking for weeks about the fact that one of the reasons that religious beliefs become so outpictured in social challenge is that what people hold most dear, at the core, what they believe to be are their greatest values and principles, those can't help but shape what they do in terms of their social involvement, their political involvement, their community involvement. I believe that religious beliefs actually shape culture in a very big way, as culture shapes all these other institutions. So there is no way that any of us are trying to do community building with diverse groups that aren't running into the questions of how do we share but maintain our individual identities of which we're so proud, and how do we speak about collective good while still maintaining individuality and individuation. So,
well said.
I actually said that. You can quote me. So, Jim, how much longer can you stay with us, or should we let you go?
I have a few more minutes, and then I have to run.
Okay, well, you go
ahead.
I have to run off
and quote you to someone.
Oh, please. Please don't. What I'm thinking right now is that since we have a relatively small group today, that and Jim will sign off whenever he needs to, but I was hoping that if we just call, I could call on you one by one, and you might, you don't necessarily, after you introduce yourself, have to talk so formally about your work or your organization, but you may do so, and also might just want to express the thoughts that are occurring to you right now, because this seems to be a pretty lively topic. So I'm going to call first on Renee Lindstrom.
That's
Renee, would
me.
You like to share?
Renee, and I'm from Victoria, B.C., and I'm just new. I've just started, so I don't really have a lot to share today.
Well, thank you. Welcome very much. And next is Reverend Kathleen Johnson.
Hello. I just wanted to share that I was at the World Parliament of the Parliament of World's Religions, and it was a profound, profound experience for me. My husband went with me as well, and it's so wonderful to be tapped into this again on this call today. It brings back the memories of just the awe and the wonder of the all of these world religions coming together for a common purpose. It's, to me, it's thrilling, it's exciting, and I'm so happy to be part of it. And thank you for the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen. You're talking about the most recent parliament in Melbourne?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. We had a wonderful delegation that went there from New Thought. And thank you. And next, Trish Farley.
Oh, hi, everyone. I'm Trish Farley. I'm from Torrance, California. I am a counselor and astrologer in private practice, and I attend the Center for Spiritual Living in Redondo Beach. And this weekend we are having the I Have a Dream project after Dr. Martin Luther King. For the first 64 days, our spiritual center, the first 64 days of the year, our spiritual center honors the nonviolent peace dream of Dr. King. And on this particular coming Sunday, we're having people who want to participate write out in 25 words or less, I have a dream that, and then,
wow.
Yeah, share that. And so I'll be hosting the event. It will be between the services and after the services on Sunday. And my co-host and I are really excited to see what kinds of ideas we get, and then we're going to compile them in some kind of an art project that I'm not sure is really, really defined so far. I think we have to see what we get first. But that's an exciting thing for me. And I must say that participating in these talks and teleconferences has really gotten my wheels turning with more enthusiasm and for participating in this project and writing my own 25 words. Thank you very much.
What a great project. That's really neat.
Oh, thank you.
And Trish, since you will be capturing all the visions and putting them into some form, maybe at some point you could share that as part of the Season for Nonviolence project, and we could find a way to distribute those a little more broadly as well, because that's exactly the kind of project that would motivate other groups to do the same kind of thing.
Wonderful. Yes, I'm absolutely open to that. It's an exciting idea, and I'll discuss that this weekend with my co-host. Her name is Krista Magidson, and we'll see where we go with it. And yes, absolutely, I would welcome that, and thank you very much for the offer.
Absolutely, we'll talk more about it. See, this is why Jim and I enjoy. It takes a lot of work and effort to put these calls and series together, and I think Jim and I enjoy it so much because when we find out what all of you are doing and thinking, it's inspiring to us, as opposed to the more top-down model where we talk, you listen, and we don't have any regard for what it is you're contributing when you're contributing so much. I'm going to ask Hope,
really great.
Joyce Atkinson, to speak.
Yes, this is Hope. I'm a practitioner student in Dothan, Alabama at the Spiritual Enrichment Center. I'm also a member of the we're a participant in the Interfaith Group in Dothan, and we meet once a month at different churches or sometimes in a restaurant with whoever would like to attend from all the different faiths in our community. We usually have a topic that we kind of speak to. Last month it was on making room for the other. And then we get the perspective from different faiths about what that means and finding a common ground there. We exchange a lot of information that we've found helpful in our own quest for expanding our compassion and opening broader into the community. So this has been helpful to me and hearing these conversations. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Hope.
Great.
You know, one of the things that our assistant and engineer, Megan, who's at the controls right now, is looking up is on our Seasons for Peace and Nonviolence website for the Season for Interfaith and Intercultural Celebration, we have a resource called Entering into Ecumenical and Interreligious Dialogue. And it talks a lot about the purposes and the guidelines and gives some dialogue questions. So I'm not sure if you're aware that this resource exists, but I would like to encourage you all to look a little more carefully at what's available, because we've actually anticipated a lot of these needs, and we've gone to some of the best people, I think, in the world who are creating processes for dialogue in this realm. And so they're not arbitrarily coming up with their questions. They're actually testing them with groups and testing them in terms of how the language fits with people's traditions, because languaging means everything sometimes. But I really applaud what you're doing, and you're doing it in a part of the world that's not always so friendly to these kinds of ideas. So thank you, Hope. I'm going to ask Kate.
I'm sorry, I have to jump out. Before Kate take off. I have places to go, but this has been a great one today. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Bye, Jim. We're waving goodbye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, Kate.
Hi. I'm having to ground myself to even be able to sit and talk right now because I'm so excited, and I did check out the agent information. I'm living in I'm finding myself, it feels like, in the perfect place with the perfect passion, and since I've been on these calls and more involved in the Seasons for Nonviolence this year, I'm recognizing how unique this little area that I am. My friends are the spiritual leaders at the Episcopalian Church, the Sufi Center, the Buddhist and the Zen groups, the Yoga Center, the university, the you name it. They're my friends. And I've been wanting a way to share with them so we could come together in this type of a organized sort of, not really, but having something together. And I'm so excited about the whole thing. I just don't know what to do with myself. I'm wanting to stop doing everything else I'm doing and focus only on this. That's how excited I am about it. That's it. It's like, uh-oh, and it's like, I'm a spiritual leader of the Unity Church here, and I can't let go of that.
Well, and we're going to see you grow your vision. I can feel it now.
Oh, I can too, and I so appreciate you. And I a little off track, but not completely. You're involved with the DVD and the guidebook for Heart to Lead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're just
about to. Oh, man, sure. I want every woman in this county to listen to that DVD. It's gotten so many people excited that I know the circles are going to start happening just in a moment. And, oh, gosh, you've given me language and some, I don't know, just an inspiration, I think. And I just so appreciate you. I'm so overwhelmed, I don't even know what question to ask. Kind of thing, but I'm like diving in.
Well, you've definitely made my day, if not my week. But it comes from just feeling that kind of. It comes from feeling that kind of inspiration that you're feeling right now, and we'll work more on this. You know, the sky's the limit. We're going to issue that invitation for churches to have access to copies of the Heart to Lead DVD and guidebook. We're working on that campaign right now because we agree with you that it's a very it's a must see for a lot of the communities. And there's an interesting thing I want to say for those of you who are part of the New Thought community and or our ministers, heads of churches in the New Thought community, that in my work in interreligious dialogue and also in making this film Heart to Lead subtitled Women as Allies for the Greater Good.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I realize that's a very keen point is that when you think about the world's major religious tradition, of which New Thought is now becoming more and more recognized at that table, and that probably happened at the Parliament of Religions in Melbourne, that we actually started being recognized for the fact that we are a world religious tradition. We may be a little atypical, but we are. It is probably the only religious tradition that is predominantly women clergy. Now, if you think about the history of religion and its patriarchy over the course of thousands of years, you might let it sink in a little bit just what an important point it is that in the New Thought tradition, spiritual leadership is more the domain of women leaders, working very well with male leaders, of course, but the fact that those tables have shifted a little is actually historical. So I just wanted to make note of that. And sorry for the little speech, but we're going to go on now and actually ask Reverend Joseph if he would like to check in and talk to us a little bit.
Yes, this is Reverend Joe Nemec from Spokane, and I'm actually co-pastor. I have a woman, my wife, that is also a leader of the Center for Spiritual Living here with me, and we actually try to be involved in different things. So I got involved in interfaith work a few years ago, and one of my big frustrations has continuously been that other religions seemingly don't want to get involved. And what was said just a few minutes ago about not trying to make it a membership organization, but just invite people to participate in different community things, I'll have to admit that I'm going to work on that within my own consciousness, because we have been trying to build a membership organization so that we have some kind of, for lack of a better word, a legitimate standing within the spiritual community. And it has not worked up until now since I've been here. And so this is something that I will admit I'm going to have to work on to really change how I think about what the organization should be. And what direction we want to, because we want to grow. We just had a dinner Sunday evening, and what we're doing is we're doing panel discussions on phases of life, and we did one on early childhood and what different faith paths, how we view early childhood, how we bring them into the world, whether we baptize them or whatever that case may be, and they're entering into adulthood, what the different religions did with that. This time we talked about what the faith values in relationships, marriages, family were within the different religions. And unfortunately, it was only attended by about 30 people, and a good portion of those were from the church that sponsored it or opened their doors for us that evening. And it's one of those things of me having to get my maleness out of the way, and I know it, get my maleness out of the way of expecting some kind of results now, and bring into my life some semblance of, okay, this is what we're doing, which is more than what's been done in the past, and it's okay. And it's just really, I'll be honest, it's hard to make that shift in consciousness for me, but I'm working on it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Joe. See, you're one of the you're one of the good ones, because you're even asking that question of your own consciousness, and you have been doing the heavy lifting. I mean, you, in terms of the male leadership quality, has been doing the heavy lifting for decades and centuries, if not millennia. And making that shift is not going to be an easy thing. But what I think our times are calling for right now is the ability to. It's not linear, it's nonlinear, and it's asking us to not need to follow the outline so that you know what the outcome is when you take the first step, but it's more emergent than that, where every step of progress, every little success you have, at that point suggests what the direction should be from there, because you're including so many voices in making that collective decision. So I really encourage you to consider this idea of inviting interfaith people, not as representatives, but not just as Jews or Muslims or Buddhists or what have you, but as human beings who really have the consciousness to understand what's emerging at the next level. And it doesn't have anything to do with compromising in their traditional beliefs, but they're being asked as basically as advisors, as consultants who understand this work very well, to give their wisdom as individuals. And I bet you anything that if you put out that invitation and you don't need to know where it's going to end up, that people are going to make friends the way that Kate was discussing, that her friends in the community are now a Sufi, a Muslim, a Buddhist, not her colleagues or coworkers. Remember, she didn't put it that way. These are her friends. And that's what the Dalai Lama did say at the Parliament of Religions, is that if I can get together and make friends with these people, it's much more likely that when I need something or I'm willing to help with something, I will pick up the telephone and call my friend and we'll find a way to work it out. So, I, you know what, Joe, I think you're on a breakthrough path here, because I've been listening to your frustration all these weeks and I'm hearing something new. So thank you very much for sharing that. Next is Yvette. Yvette, are you here?
Yes, I am here.
Would you like to share something?
No, not right now. I'm just listening. I came a little bit late into the call. Thank
you. No problem. Thanks. Thanks for being here. How about Suzette?
Hello, everyone. I'm calling from Herndon, Virginia, the East Coast side of the United States. Actually, I'm just enjoying the conversation. I am kind of self-study into spiritual development, and I kind of feel like there I have a calling, so I'm working on defining that with God and through prayer and meditation. So I enjoy this a lot. It's given me a lot of insight to other religions, and a lot just resonates with me throughout the day as I'm working or you know, being with my kids and considering life differently. So I'm most appreciative.
Thanks, Suzette. That's great. That's great to hear that. Phil McNabb.
Hi there. I'm sorry, but I came in late too. So just listening for me today is wonderful.
Okay. Thanks, Phil. Thanks for being here. Cynthia.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. I'm very new. Also, I kind of transplanted myself from California. I've been a follower of the New Thought religions for probably the last 35 years, and I transplanted myself right in the center of the fundamentalist area in Indiana. It's a small community with probably the closest group for the season for nonviolence is about 250 miles away from me. I happened to come across to you on the internet, and am I speaking to Barb?
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I have met you. I've done work with you in California at the One Spirit Religious Science Church. But I feel the need to do something. I feel the need to organize. And my mode of operandi, so to speak, so far, because I don't have access to New Thought religions in my area, is to each week I visit a different church. I've been to the Baptist and the Nazarene and Presbyterian, and I just go to service just to get to know the people. And a lot of the places, I'm a senior, so I check out the senior center, and I feel like a seed is what I feel like. I feel like a seed to plant maybe the possibility of the growth of a new thought about religion and spirituality. And I am friends with a couple of the ministers, and I'm trying to find maybe a way to start, maybe to kind of bring people together, because they have asked me about what's New Thought. They've never heard of it. We have Ku Klux Klan activity still in this area, so we're really backwards, and I'm treading very lightly and very lovingly. And I was wondering if anybody could give me an idea how to start, if there's information, maybe I could pull a meeting together, have access to information to hand out. Are there any ideas?
Absolutely. I'm going to say this again. I'm in danger of adding to my 80-hour week. But Cynthia, if any of you on the call today, and Cynthia, I'm saying this to you too, would drop an email to me, Barbara at agnt.org. I think it would be more productive to have individual discussions with those of you who are really facing the challenge of forming groups and relationships like this, because we have lots and lots of resources. I mean, so many resources, and I'd love to see them used. But I think I'd rather help you create a program that's more customized to your specific needs at the moment, rather than sending you out into a whole vast sea of resources with you not really knowing how to find your way around it. But there are answers to these problems. Yes, and I already see your role. I mean, I already get it, but we'll talk about it personally when we have a chat, okay?
Okay. Could you keep saying AGT?
Mm-hmm.
Is that AGAND?
It's the acronym for Association for Global New Thought. So it's AGNT.
Oh, okay. AGNT, and what was the rest of it, Barbara?
.org. Well, that's
.org.
Our website,
okay.
AGNT.org. And if you want to email me,
Barbara at AG, it's going to be Barbara at AGNT.org.
AGNT.org.
Okay.
Yes.
I got it.
Oh,
thank you.
Great. Thank you, Cynthia.
Yeah, I've been, I actually was invited to come in to meet a gentleman that is said to be the grand poopa of the Ku Klux Klan here. So you can see the backwoods I'm in. I mean, I'm really down where the most possibilities are available.
Okay,
and,
well,
you know,
I think you should accept that invitation.
A lot of fear.
I think you should accept that invitation. Let's work on it.
Okay, I will definitely email you and talk later.
Okay,
so
great.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next I'd like to hear from Amy or M.A. Barnhurst.
Yes, I'm here.
Is it Amy or M.A.?
It's Ami.
Ami. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. I'm kind of just listening today. I'm not really with any organization. I'm just very inspired to create peace within myself, because I know that's where it starts, to then create peace within the world. So I'm very excited to be part of this organization now. I'm glad I found it. So thank you very much.
Thank you. How about Francesco? Francesco, are you here? Hello, Francesco? No, I guess not. And then finally, Joy, we heard from you before with your question, but did you have anything you wanted to add?
Not really. I think because of my background as a writer, as well as interpreter for the deaf, occupational therapist, board member of the Center for the Rate of Restoration, I'm going to crib that idea about I have a dream and have maybe our different groups of people, the humanists, the Unitarians, the Muslims, a peace group, all do the same kind of thing. I think that's a wonderful idea of sharing our dream of what we would like to do in this space of a building.
Wow. Well, let's talk further about this, Joy, just, you know, even if it's only to indulge me because I find the conversation so interesting, but let's do set up a time where we can just chat, okay?
Okay, that sounds
okay,
good.
Just get in touch with me. There was something that I wanted to ask about, and it just totally flew out of my mind. What we've been talking about a lot, especially this call, actually it's taken a bit of a turn from what I expected, but I think it's interesting, and I'm willing to let the emergent happen here, because it actually tells us the truth of the directions we want to move in rather than my idea of what I thought should happen on this call. But it's clear to me that regardless of, all of you are involved in very similar but different expressions of important work in your communities. I hear it every time you speak, and I know that you wouldn't even be here if that weren't true. And I know that regardless of the specific work that you're addressing right now, that there's a basic challenge that needs to be addressed in order to do effective work in any of the areas. And at the very least, we have to find ways to conduct authentic encounters with others of different faiths, cultures, and ideologies, because the conflict and disharmony are always rooted in some form of resistance to what seems like foreign or the other. So I guess I'd just like to throw it out for general discussion here. How does your work take this into account so that the problems your community faces today will be different in the future? I just wanted to let that question sit out there for a minute, that if conflict and disharmony are always rooted in some form of resistance to what seems foreign or other, how do you address this issue, and what are you encountering with how people are struggling with this challenge? Because if this barrier isn't crossed, then the problems that you're facing today will persist. But if the encounter with other can actually be addressed in these groups that you're forming, and people can have breakthroughs and transformations that touch the depths of their heart, then things will ever be changed in the future. It just can't be the same after you have realizations like that. So I'm just wondering if anyone would like to comment about this or share any other insights, or even ask a question or make a suggestion about what you might want to talk about, if that's not the right question for the moment. If you have anything that you'd like to share, you can just press 1 on your keypad and we'll see your hand go up. I see Trish has something. Trish, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I was thinking about that this morning, Barbara, just about the, the behaviors of conflict and resistance and what we do with that, because we're human, we all have egos, and as much as we all pray for peace and do what we can for peace, we've got to do something to manage our egos, resistance, and intolerance for differences in other people, which do create the conflict and the disharmony. And so I'm thinking that what about the idea that we could educate or inculcate the peoples of the world to understand that the peace process can begin with, it's possible for it to begin even though that there is conflict. That is, that the conflict is not the absence of peace, but just a resistance to peace that can be overcome and transformed. So for some people, it can be the beginning of the peace process, although it does take some time, some, let's say, backing off, regrouping, gaining perspective, being and a lot of education and life experience to understand how we can, be more tolerant of other people's differences, so we can resolve that conflict into more harmonious relations.
Absolutely. Does anyone have any comments to what Trish just said, rather than a new question or comment? Well, I'm going to comment on it because it brings up something. I don't know how many of you are familiar with AGNT has done in the past a really wonderful program that we call the Synthesis Dialogues. We've done we've met with His Holiness the Dalai Lama in India and two places in Italy. We've met 3 times for about a week each with a small group of people who are of equally impressive stature from around the world, just to engage in dialogue about some of these questions. And the last one was in the Pope's Summer Palace in Castel Gandolfo near Rome. And we had invited religious and spiritual leaders and also people who were heads of state or influential in government of some kind in order to discuss the idea, what is the relationship between spirit and governance, was basically the question. And we did some role play. We had a rabbi from Jerusalem, a very kind of very radical guy, and then a young woman, a very intelligent young woman, who was representing the Arab worldview, and they were asked to role play their positions as Israelis and Arabs in a terrible intractable conflict. And we have all this on tape. It's very interesting. The dialogue at first was inevitably just ending in them shouting at each other, arguing with each other, because there was just no way that they could come to any kind of harmony whatsoever. And then we asked them to do the role play again, but this time we said, instead of arguing your position, why don't you try finding ways of asking the other, the person sitting across from you, what it would take for them to open their mind to a situation that has to which they've always been closed in the past. What is it that you would have to give or they would want to see happen in order for them to feel that entering into the dialogue was safe? And we also have on tape the fact that they came to an incredible resolution in their dialogue where basically she was saying, well, we just can't have violence killing our children. And the rabbi said, okay, well, what if we could promise you that we would stop all violence in that particular community? And then she said, we would give up our claim to Jerusalem. And it was such a powerful moment. But they didn't represent anything, so they had no power to do that. But you can see that the breakthrough in the dialogue came from asking the question of the individual whose resistance is probably rooted in fear, what would it take for you to feel safe about being in this dialogue? So I'm wondering if in your experience in your communities, any of you are actually resonating with this idea right now, how it could possibly work in the situation that you're in. Does anyone have a comment to it? I'm wondering, even if Joe, if you're still with us, if you were to ask that question of people who came to your interfaith meeting, you know, what is the thing that you fear about being in dialogue with other religions, and what would it take for you to get over that fear? Would that be a fair question that might fly in one of your meetings?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know which, the people that come to the meetings are more than willing to be part of the dialogue. I was listening to a lady talking about the KKK, and I don't know how many people are aware of it, but here in Spokane, we had a actual bomb was placed, a live bomb was placed along the route, the march route, and it was detected by somebody just seeing a knapsack sitting on a bench by itself where you wouldn't think that somebody would forget it, and within moments, without anybody really knowing about it, the whole route was changed, the police came in, the FBI was involved, and all that stuff. But, you know, I live in an equally conservative area, and it's not the people that come to the meetings, it's the people that don't need to listen to anybody else because they have the right religion. And I'm even talking about conservative Jewish tradition that I've talked to a couple times and has not sent someone to participate in the meetings at any level. I'm going to work on making it a non-membership organization. I think that might be the first step so that people that come don't think they have to become members. But right now, it's getting, you know, it's talking to the people that aren't there. It's like talking in the air and hoping, and, you know, part of my teaching, obviously, is as my consciousness and your consciousness is raised, so too does the race consciousness within our community and our country become incrementally higher. And then with time, those people will be more open to sitting at a table and finding out what it is, what the differences are, and being okay. That, you know, I think for me, what I see in this community being a conservative community is people are happy with what they have in terms of spiritual work, and they know in their heart that they're right, and so they don't need to participate with anybody else. that's the barrier at a very local level that I seem to be bumping up against.
Yeah, no, I understand. We face the same thing at the Parliament time and time again, is the people that just never showed up were the fundamentalists and the people who had nothing to gain and the most to lose. So what you've just said is kind of expected. But the encouraging piece is that I think we sometimes have it backwards, that we think that we can't gain much unless we've got everyone at the table, or at least the main players at the table. But I find through experience that there are so many people who are ready to play that if you actually begin building something with the people who are really willing and able and excited about being there, that they start to build things that become attractive to people who aren't at the table with you. And this is the place where we have to rely on that old phrase, you have to trust the process, because what are we even doing here if we don't believe that there's a spiritual trajectory or a throughway that has a deeper wisdom for solving these kinds of problems than our minds might be able to grasp and plan right at this moment. I actually think you're so much on the right track, and if you build with the strong people you already have, I don't think you have to worry right now about the people who aren't there. I think that'll take care of itself in time. I also see that Kate had another comment. Are you still there, Kate?
I'm still here. The longer I listen, the more I'm awed with the community I'm in. What I'm learning is that the common denominator in all of us seems to be that everyone is working towards peace right now. And to use, you know, all the resources that Agent has and this conversation just excites me, because I can see such a potential in bringing all the peace people in each of these faith groups together. You know, like here, we even talked, the six of us were sitting together talking the other night, making plans for something with getting a bunch of people together. And we're a very, very small group, but what we're learning in our fingers out with everybody else is that we all have such wonderful little happenings in our own little organization group, our own little religious group, and the other group doesn't know about it, but they're working on the same things, they're calling people into town, and it's like, why don't we have some form of newsletter or something that informs everybody about everybody's things, because we're all wanting to go to everybody else's, but we don't find out about them because it's just this little community and they're doing it themselves. And by bringing them together in this wider scope, like you're talking, that just, I think we're ripe for it. And we're right in the middle of the Bible Belt. We have the biggest Baptist church in the nation here. And 30 minutes to the west is white supremacist groups, and 45 minutes to the east is KKK. And still, there's this community of people who are just loving and want to see peace in the world and are working at their own way of bringing it together. And it's happening everywhere. And it's like, this is seems to me like a wonderful way to get a hub going or something so that everybody at least know what everybody else is doing, and then we can come together for an annual event of some sort that just brings it all together, you know?
Well, it's happening because you all are making it happen. I've been involved in so many organizations, sat on boards, and what discourages me the most, and the reason why I enjoy Association for Global New Thought and Seasons for Peace and Nonviolence and Synthesis Dialogues and that kind of project so much, is that I have heard the most articulate talk about the visions and the purposes and what we should achieve and what we all hope to do about peace, and 99.9% of the time they don't transcend the talking stages, and that's because the people, there's a kind of a hierarchy or an elitism that goes on that doesn't really reach down to the people who are actually involved in doing the work. And those are the people that I admire and respect the most. I think the model is flipped on its head. I think the grassroots leadership, the citizen leadership that's spiritually motivated, is the very best resource for achieving any of these goals. And I can't understand why so many important people are so blind to that. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. What I wanted to say to that, Kate, is that the Gandhi King Season for Nonviolence is now in its 14th year. And what you mentioned about basically our model has been what you just mentioned, that the communities that have had the most success with Season for Nonviolence are the ones that decided that they would be the convener or they would be the umbrella that would look for all the other good peace work and related work that was going on in their community, call those people together in order for them to be able to share what they're so proud of doing and let other people know what they're doing. And then we just created a kind of a collective umbrella site, a calendar and a set of resources and a way of people reporting into us from hundreds of cities around the world so that we could be the umbrella that didn't really create anything new, but we were able to shine light on what everyone else was already doing. Now, that works at this broad level, but it also works at the local level. And one of the things that you might all want to consider doing at some point is not only calling people together in order to share the work that they're doing, but actually do a little bit of an acknowledgement ceremony. Get certificates or plaques or flowers or statues or something that when each person is introduced and they get to talk a little bit about what they've achieved in their organization that benefits the community, the rest of the people there actually honor and acknowledge them for the peace that they're bringing to making a better world. So this kind of honoring and acknowledging, it's a ritual that we should not underestimate because it's very, very empowering and it brings communities together. And an evening like that is, people never forget it. So probably some of you have already done work like that, but if you haven't, I would really consider. It's so easy to do. You know, you find a place, you invite people, it costs very little, and everybody benefits. Does anybody have another comment? Because Hope, you have
Yes. I just wanted to speak a little bit to something that might be very grassroots, and it doesn't label itself under any spiritual religion, but that's just book study groups. Here in Alabama, when the advent of the book, The Help, came out, and book clubs started reading that book. It had a tremendous impact on racial relationships and people examining what had happened in their lives and what's happening now. And I think there's such an abundance of great literature out there, and it doesn't polarize people when you can speak through a book like that. And book groups, you know, every denomination and faith likes to read a good book. So you have an opportunity to come together, have a neutral base to talk and to expand consciousness and to open to new ideas. So sometimes I find that a very, very good way to approach people or ideas that I wouldn't want to approach through under the auspices of my church or my interfaith work.
No, that's very true. Yeah, book study groups are a big, great idea. On our website, we have a lot of descriptions of different films that people can get very easily, DVDs that they can get together even in a living room and watch together, and it really honors all faiths because it's presenting an idea that all faiths seem to support but doesn't seem exclusive to any of them. And so when you are inspired by a book, as Hope was just saying, or a film that you watch together that really gives a good kind of out-picturing of what people really, really value in their hearts, then the dialogue just naturally flows out of that, and that's always a good way to get people together on higher ground. I call it the highest common denominator approach because our society has been playing on the lowest common denominator approach for too long now. and we can do something about it. Well, we're getting sort of close to the end of our time together, but I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed today, absolutely inspired by all of you. Is there anybody else that has any last words of wisdom or would even like to offer a brief invocation or prayer for our ending? Non-denominational, of course. I guess not. So I'm just going to thank you all so much for today and remind you to try to look over the website. But if you have any specific questions or if you'd like to follow up with a dialogue on anything we've talked about, make sure that you just get in touch with us and that we'll just make it happen, because I don't want these calls to be the sort of thing that you give so much time to, which I really appreciate. And then, as always, as usual, you go away thinking, well, that was nice, but then what? I want this to be a working resource for us as time goes on. So thank you very much.